From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Utah Clean Energy is a nonprofit organization that promotes and educates the public on energy efficiency and sources of renewable energy. They also are a great source of education and awareness for the public when it comes to proposed state legislation or utility policies with respect to both renewable and non-renewable energy.
So joining us in the first half of the show will be Sarah Wright, Executive Director of Utah Clean Energy. She'll talk about the growing movement in solar power in this state, as well as Rocky Mountain Power's plans to place a monthly fee on all planned and existing rooftop solar owners.
That's right. Then in the second half of the show, we have some breaking news, some serious breaking news that the new staff is going to share with us. That's at the bottom of the hour. And after that, we'll get back to some of our own environmental news, including my recent trip to Puerto Rico and what I learned about what goes on there with respect to environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'll share that with you.
Perfect. It'll be great to hear about your trip on assignment in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
We'll also be talking about a recent development in a lawsuit against climate scientist Michael Mann. We'll be talking, EJ Elliott, our intern, will be giving us an update on the energy use of cable boxes. And Chris will answer the question, how many guys does it take to install a pipeline?
I've been trying to get to that for the last 3 weeks. We're going to try to get it in.
Maybe we'll bump that first.
It's less than 100, okay? It's not 10,000 like the proponents of the
Keystone XL. There, news item done.
That's pretty much done if we don't get to it. But I'll have some more details on what that means. And maybe even some tips on lightning. It's lightning season around here.
It is.
Things you need to know. It's This Green Earth. And it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power Watt Smart New Homes Program offers incentives for building a new energy-efficient home that can help you enjoy year-round comfort, higher resale value, and lower energy bills. To learn more or find a builder in your area, wattsmart.com.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage service and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Help keep Summit County Recycling clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, this is John with Park City Nursery.
And this is Kay with the Park City Tree Ranch.
Supporting KPCW since 1983.
Between the two locations, we carry a variety of products to help your yard and garden flourish, including living plants, yard art, seeds, bark, compost, and organic products. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, and that's Chris Cherniak across the board, waving to all of you.
Yes.
And in the studio with us this morning is Sarah Wright. She is the Executive Director of Utah Clean Energy, and we're here to talk about some proposed changes in renewable energy policy here in Utah. But I think we'll start by talking about Utah Clean Energy itself. What is the organization, and what do you guys do?
Utah Clean Energy, our focus is transforming our entire energy framework. When my son was about three, I realized I'd been a consultant for years, and I knew that I needed to use my skills to create a better world for the next generation. And so we really focus on climate change, but how we do that is focusing on advancing energy efficiency for our homes, for our buildings. We want Utah to be the most efficient state in the nation. And then we also work to drive renewable energy. We want everyone to be able to put solar on their rooftops. We want large utility scale projects. It's all about transitioning our energy into the 21st century.
So when did you found the organization?
So back in 2001, my son is now 17, and we have come a long way, but there's still so much work to do. But I am excited. Things are starting to shift.
And do you have a staff on the organization in addition to yourself?
Right, we do. We started as one-person volunteer shop, and now we have a staff of eight.
Wow.
We have two attorneys because a lot of our work is very legal. We're before the Public Service Commission, challenging Rocky Mountain Power's decisions, what they want to build, making the case that efficiency and renewables are really the least cost, least risk options for all ratepayers and all citizens.
So what was your background when you decided to form this, your educational background and work background?
Well, it's interesting. For the first year of my career right out of college, I did a little bit of oil and gas exploration as a geologist. Huh. I went back and received a master's in public health with an emphasis on occupational health and was a consultant for 15 years, really helping industry become cleaner, become safer, but it was really about compliance, just making helping them comply with the law, and I definitely wanted to go beyond that.
Fantastic.
So what changes have you seen over the period of time since you launched Utah Clean Energy, both, I guess, let's say positive and some of the ongoing challenges that remain?
So I think positive. When we started Utah Clean Energy, the utilities didn't have any incentives for energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. So we helped prove that it's the cheapest, cleanest resource for them to give you incentives to insulate your homes, to retrofit lightings and businesses. And so over that time period, we've saved enough energy to power 240,000 homes in Utah. So that's free, clean, pollution-free energy. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of growing support for energy efficiency, and in fact, the governor just recently published a plan to take it further.
Hmm.
When we started net metering, there was not really a positive net metering program in the state. And net metering, as many know, is where you put solar on your roof and you're able to feed it back into the grid. And commercial entities couldn't do it at all because the size limitation was so small. Now we went from having a score of two Fs for net metering, there's a national scorecard, to having two As. In fact, Utah and Massachusetts were the first states to get a double A score.
We love to hear that about Utah, because it's rare that we can, you know, tout our policies on these things.
And how did they get an A? What went into that?
Well, there was quite a bit of work. We worked with all of our partners, local governments, Park City helped. We were able to, first of all, we had to change the law. So we had to pass a new policy that was better. And then you have to go through a whole, it took us about 2.5 years to make it through a rulemaking proceeding at the Public Service Commission, which is sort of the court that determines how Rocky Mountain Power delivers and is compensated for the energy. So it was a long, drawn out process, but it was worth it. And for the last 5 years, solar has almost doubled every single year in the state of Utah. And Park City has been a big part of that. If many of you remember the community challenge or the community bulk purchase program, and in a few months, Park City or Summit County increased the amount of solar 5 times over the previous year. So really kudos to Summit County for being part of that.
But you say the state legislation was developed to promote net metering or other programs? Was there other incentives?
So that was one piece, is the net metering piece, and that's just the mechanism that enables people to connect to the grid, get compensated fairly for their solar that they provide to their neighbors when they're not using it. And then another program that Utah Clean Energy worked on, just like it's the cheapest, cleanest resource to have the utility give incentives for energy efficiency, we were also able to prove that it is the cheapest, cleanest resource for the utility to provide incentives for solar installations. Mm-hmm. So there is a very large $50 million solar incentive program that the utility has because of some rate structure and some of the net metering issues that I think you talked about last week or recently. Most of that money goes to commercial industrial customers, but we are fine with that because they have some of the biggest barriers to rooftop solar.
So before we get too deep into this, give us kind of the quick overview of where our energy comes from and what the regulatory structure is behind that.
So in Utah, probably 80% of the generation is still from coal-fired power plants. It's, you know, most people don't think that when you flip the switch, you're actually, you know, burning coal. And for each kilowatt hour of energy you use, that's about 2 pounds of coal that are burned, and which is equivalent to, you know, over 2 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's something to think and keep in mind. because our investor-owned utility, Rocky Mountain Power, serves six states, and the mixture comes from all those six states, the mixture is a little bit less. You know, it's more like 60% coal-fired generation. Renewables are very small, just a few percent. We do have some hydro. A lot of more natural gas is being built in the recent time because of the cost declines there. But natural gas is not necessarily that clean, and the development of natural gas, there are a lot of emissions that come off of the pipelines and the gas fields, which is a very potent greenhouse gas.
Right, right. Better, perhaps better than coal, per se, but still not a renewable source. It's still fossil fuel.
Right, and so, it's only better than coal if we can start controlling the fugitive emissions, because methane is 21 times more potent. So the burning is better, but the development and the what they call fugitive emissions, those that escape,
right,
are really creating a big problem that's not recognized and not being handled yet.
Okay. So there's that area. Where does UCE stand on, say, nuclear power?
Our position is that we're a solution-oriented organization. We work on energy efficiency, and we work on renewables. And so that is what we focus on.
Okay.
So you mentioned the regulatory commission and the legislature when talking about, you know, Rocky Mountain Power's rate schedules. How did they interact with Rocky Mountain Power, and what's the structure there?
Well, the utility regulators and the Public Service Commission is one of the oldest governing bodies in the state, and actually in every state across the country. They were first formed in the early, you know, turn of the century. And they regulate every single decision that Rocky Mountain Power makes, what the return on equity is, which is quite high. It's between 9.8% and 10% guaranteed, as long as they're prudent. They regulate what resources they add, what rates they charge. And then the legislature, for certain parts of the regulation, they create the laws that dictate how the Public Service Commission rules Rocky Mountain Power. So, for instance, the net metering, we had to pass a new law that enabled the Public Service Commission to create an excellent program.
So there's quite a bit. It's not just Rocky Mountain Power making these decisions on their own independently. It's really tied in with our state government.
Definitely. It's all connected, and Rocky Mountain Power is keeping us very busy. They have filed probably five different cases in the last few months. And so Utah Clean Energy and our staff, and those are all pertaining to renewable energy.
So let's hop in. Let's start talking about some of those five proposals that they've come up with, and sort of where you guys stand on these.
Well, last year, Utah Clean Energy worked for over a year on a case to get a fair price for renewable energy developers that develop renewable projects in Utah. And this is based on a really old law, a 1978 federal law. But we were able to make the case that renewable developers should get a little more than what Rocky Mountain Power wanted to pay them. So now there are 500 megawatts of signed solar contracts for the state of Utah. And so what is 500 megawatts? It's kind of hard to fathom. But for perspective, we have about 20 megawatts of net metered rooftop solar right now. So it's, you know, dwarfs what we have in rooftop. And it would provide about 140,000 homes the amount of energy that they need for a year. It's equivalent to that. So that's, you know, five times the homes in Summit County. This is a really big deal, and it's coming in at a price. One of the developers, it's not published, but one of the developers said that it's coming in at $55 a megawatt hour, which, again, is just like this price, or 5.5 cents a kilowatt hour, and we pay on our rates about, you know, 10 to 13 cents. So really great deal for ratepayers, and that's locked in for 20 years. There's no risk of carbon. There's no risk of volatile fuel prices. Stellar deal for ratepayers. The catch is that Rocky Mountain Power makes their rate of return on what they invest in. So if they're not investing capital, they're not earning money. These projects are built by developers that invest the money. Rocky Mountain Power does not make any money. They just have to pass that energy on to ratepayers. Great deal for ratepayers, doesn't really work with a 100-year-old utility regulatory model. So now Rocky Mountain Power has filed two cases to try to lower the price. So, and if they lower the price, developers will not be able to build that project. So we will be intervening in those cases and trying to keep a fair price, because it's really in the best interest of ratepayers to get those really affordable, clean investments in our portfolio.
So what does that process look like? They've filed, you know, these proposals or requests. And where does it go now?
So this is administrative law is what it is. So it's pretty dry.
All right, we'll keep it quick then.
Okay.
We'll keep it quick.
So they filed their testimony. We will have to respond. There are three rounds. You file direct testimony, rebuttal testimony, surrebuttal testimony, and then it goes to hearing. And then the Public Service Commission will rule. But that's over months and months and many data requests and digging in and hiring consultants, because it's a data-driven, evidence-driven process. And so that's why Utah Clean Energy, we're kind of this unknown entity, because we sort of work under the radar and just keep presenting the evidence so that we can have rulings that make sense for Utah.
Okay. So if you just joined us, we're speaking with Sarah Wright. She's executive director of Utah Clean Energy, an advocacy group for energy efficiency and renewable energy here in the state. And so let's talk about the proposed tariff here, or I don't know if you call it a tariff, but a fee that would be placed on each rooftop solar owner that Rocky Mountain Power is proposing. Thumbnail sketch of that and your thoughts on good idea, bad idea.
We think it's definitely a bad idea.
Okay.
We want the rates to be fair, so we want to make sure that solar rooftop customers are paying their way. But Rocky Mountain Power has presented no evidence that show that the cost for you to put solar on your roof to all ratepayers, being connected to the grid and using the grid, et cetera, outweighs the benefits of that energy that you're providing that's clean, has no carbon risk, has no fuel volatility. So we want to have a robust analysis and make a decision that's based on the facts.
Okay. And the fee they're proposing
is $4.65 per month, and then they're also want to raise the minimum bill. So if you're one of those few solar customers that's able to go to zero, they also want you to pay more.
Oh, okay.
And actually, while we're on this topic, there's a meeting taking place in town tonight, and you guys are involved with that. You're partnering with HEAL Utah.
Yes, HEAL Utah will be here. They have organized a briefing tonight, and one of our staff or two of our staff will be there to present some of the technical issues. And do you know where that is now? I should know.
I'm trying to pull it up. I think it's at the Richens building. Yeah, at the library in Kimball Junction. EJ Elliott has the details with the save.
So that's tonight, 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Learn more about that proposed fee.
And then on the 28th at the Salt Lake City Library, we'll be doing a public witness 101 to prep. There's a public witness day on the 29th, and we'll be doing another prep event there.
Okay. Well, Sarah, are you overall encouraged by what you've seen over these past few years in terms of municipalities, individuals embracing renewable energy, and the legislature kind of embracing policies too, or enacting policies?
You know, I am, and now's the time for us not to let up and have the public really get involved, because I think that's what's moving this along, having smart people working on the policies and then having the public help push those along. And it's been a great partnership.
Well, couldn't have done it without your efforts at Utah Clean Energy. Great. Where do people go to learn more?
They can learn more on our website, utahcleanenergy.org. We have a newsletter to sign up for. You can sign up for our newsletter on that site and follow all the nitty-gritty of these cases as well, if you're so inclined.
Yeah.
And are you looking for public support, public comments, or input at all?
Always. So we put things out in our newsletter, but for this hearing that's coming up on the 29th, we want to have a really big showing. And we've also been told that Barry Goldwater will be here on the 29th before the public hearing, and there will be a rally in front of the Heber Wells building. And really, his whole organization is called Tell Utilities Solar Won't Be Killed.
Task. Wow.
And so there's the nation is watching what's happening here.
Yeah. well, there's no shortage of sun to take advantage of out here. We're foolish not to.
Yeah, we're one of the six sunniest states.
Exactly. Sarah Wright, Executive Director with Utah Clean Energy, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on This Green Earth. And maybe we'll see you tonight at the event down at the Kimball Junction, 6 p.m.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a little break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we got some developing news that you don't want to miss. We'll have our new staff reporting on that. It's This Green Earth and KPCW 91.9 FM here in Park City. We'll be back right after these words from our underwriters.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts from Park City Medical Center, a nonprofit community hospital and part of the Intermountain Healthcare System. Park City Medical Center is proud to be consistently recognized as having some of the most engaged employees in the country. Little wonder, considering we offer all employees a pension plan, 401k, excellent insurance, and of course, year-round employment. We are currently recruiting nurses, registrars, housekeepers, kitchen staff, and more. Visit parkcitymedicalcenter.org to find your dream job.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Canyons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through in-field classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
I'm Tim Henney. Join us Wednesday at 9 a.m. for The Mountain Life.
As we head into summer, we'll talk with the experts on health, nutrition, and fitness.
From celebrating the solstice to finding balance in your work, play, and relationships.
From detoxing your diet to intensifying your immunity.
From cartilage restoration to joint resurfacing.
That's Wednesday at 9 a.m. on The Mountain Life. Brought to you by
Park City Clinic,
Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa,
Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank,
Park Meadows Country Club,
and Vento Pizzeria.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson. EJ Elliott is our summer intern, new head of news chief for this summer.
That's right. I like that title. It sounds a lot better than intern.
Well, we've got some breaking news we want to share with you that just developed. Larry Warren, station manager, is joining us to share all of you with that news. Larry.
Yeah, the FBI and state of Utah are holding a press conference at this hour, and I've been trying to listen to bits and pieces of it, but basically this is really unprecedented in the state of Utah. The last two former attorneys general are now under arrest and have been booked into the county jail.
Wow.
And that would be Shurtleff and?
John Swallow. And Mark Shurtleff. Swallow was charged with a pattern of unlawful activities, a second-degree felony, illegally accepting gifts, which is a second-degree felony, and two counts of receiving bribes by a public official. And that's a third-degree felony. Excuse me, I'm a little out of breath catching up to this.
Yeah, we had you running in the door here. We appreciate that.
Right.
Shurtleff was charged in Third District Court with a pattern of unlawful activity, a second-degree felony, three counts of receiving or soliciting bribes by a public official. That's a third-degree felony. Improper use of an employee's position, which is a Class B misdemeanor, two counts of witness tampering, one third-degree felony, and one Class A misdemeanor tampering with evidence, and two counts of obstruction of justice. And a lot of this...
Wow, that's a long list.
Well, it's a huge list. And both of them were subject to really strict search warrants a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. where law officers armed busted into their homes, kind of pinned everybody in their place and cleaned out both houses, Swallows and Shirtlifts, and that indicated to everybody observing that this was pretty darn serious stuff. Right. And apparently, between that and other leads they've had, they've been able to come up with just huge laundry lists of charges they could file. So
right.
at 8 this morning, they went to both Swallow's house and Shirtlift's house and arrested them, took them straight to the county jail, charged them, fingerprinted them, did mug shots, the whole bit you do for anybody who's arrested. And they are both probably still at the county jail now, awaiting you know, whatever the procedure is for being bailed out
bonding.
Of jail. But this is just stunning, stunning political news in the state of Utah, which is so dominated by the Republican Party that here the last two Republican attorney generals of the state of Utah are now in the Salt Lake County jail with a long list of charges against both of them.
So I'm trying to remember when this news about John Swallow started to emerge, and that was, years ago?
Well, yeah, it started before he was elected. I mean, some of this was swirling while he was running for election as attorney general, and under Shirtlift, he was the chief deputy for Mark Shirtlift, so it was going to be this seamless transition from one Republican attorney general, then his deputy takes over, and then the business continues as usual. A lot of this is wrapped up in a couple of different things. One is just kind of a pay-for-play scheme, which, you know, you hear about in Chicago
and
Illinois politics, but it was allegedly the receiving of cash for favors, for looking the other way at certain people who should have been investigated, perhaps.
Right.
There was a payday loan gentleman who gave a lot of money to Shirtlift and Swallow, and there was also an internet entrepreneur, Jeremy Johnson, in southern Utah, in St. George, who made millions in internet poker, online poker processing, and ran it through a state bank in St. George, and that was all very questionable. But Shirtlift was using Jeremy Johnson's private jet. Both of them were photographed in Johnson's Lamborghinis and Ferraris and on his houseboats so big at Lake Powell they had helipads on them.
Oh, boy.
And these are sitting attorney general and deputy attorney general getting all these favors and perks from somebody who clearly was under federal investigation for money laundering and all sorts of things in relation to his online gambling business. So to various degrees, Shirtlift and or Swallow were involved with Jeremy Johnson. To varying degrees, they were involved with the Provo gentleman who's since passed away, who ran a string of payday loan operations and the investigators, who are both a Republican district attorney in Davis County, and Sim Gill, who's the Democratic district attorney in Salt Lake County, they were put in charge of leading an investigation, a bipartisan investigation, into the two attorney generals, and to see if any of their behavior, while unseemly, certainly, their charge was to see if it was, in fact, a violation of law. And I can't count the number of laws they say were violated here. There's probably 15 to 20 charges in total involved in these indictments that came down this morning.
Any sense of what the total year's penalty might be if convicted on all charges?
It's way too early to go there.
Right.
And Shirtlift certainly has said he will fight this all the way, and I'm certain Swallow would say the same thing. A lot of these are misdemeanors. but some are felonies, second-degree felony. Both have been charged with second-degree felonies, a pattern of unlawful activity, which is a catch-all phrase, but that is, in itself is a second-degree felony. Illegally accepting gifts, that's a second-degree felony. Shirtlift, three counts of receiving or soliciting bribes by a public official, that's a felony.
Right.
I mean, this is a shocking list of charges.
Right.
And for this to happen in Utah, which is known for best governance in the nation, you know, it makes all the lists of best-run states, and it is a one-party state.
Yeah.
This is just an extraordinary indictment, both a legal indictment and a political indictment of the way business has run in the Attorney General's office, now through two regimes of attorneys general.
And wouldn't be surprised if there are some other individuals out there who may be caught up in this.
Oh, there are. there already are. Others, deputies, friends of these two gentlemen have also been charged, and in the past, Tim Lawson for one, and others have been searched. A former campaign staffer for both Republicans, Renee Cowley, had her home searched as well. Altogether, 15 search warrants have been served across the state of Utah. This probe has now been going on for 18 months. Today is the culmination of all of that. And, of course, now it goes into the legal system and probably won't hear a lot more about it. But as these indictments presumably are being unsealed this morning, some of the details that led to the charges will come out. And if you're just catching up to this story, you know, a great source has been the Salt Lake Tribune. The Salt Lake Tribune has covered this case, I would say has probably been partially responsible for keeping this on the front burner. They have done relentlessly great journalism to dig into the record of Swallow and Shirtliff and keep this on the front pages. And certainly you could go to the Tribune and read stories as recently as Sunday. About the behavior of these two, and the text messages between them are quite interesting to read.
Oh, boy.
and a lot of those were in Sunday's paper as well. So just to recap, John Swallow, the most recent former attorney general, and Mark Shirtliff, the second most recent attorney general of the state of Utah, are both under arrest. They're at the Salt Lake County Jail. They've been booked on second and third degree felonies. This goes back to a pattern of behavior that goes back as far as 2009, at least as they're detailed in the indictments.
And like you said, it's a story that has only begun to unfold.
That's right.
We'll be covering that all the while.
Is the KPCW news team in the press conference right now?
We are covering this, and we'll certainly have more at noon. But this is just, you know, I've been covering Utah politics for better than 35 years, and this is just stunning. this is truly stunning to have two of the highest officials of the state of Utah indicted and tossed in jail.
Well, move over Illinois and Louisiana.
Yeah. Now, who'd have thought?
You've
given
them
some competition,
Utah. Well, Flary, thanks for sharing that.
And the proviso, of course, is that everyone is innocent until proven guilty. This will all be hashed out in the court of law under the rules of evidence. But
sure.
And always, you know, just to put a cautionary note in, everything looks darkest on the day of arrest, you know, because you don't hear other sides of the story.
Right.
And that will unfold in the months ahead. But just the fact that that this has reached this level does not say much for the behavior of the two men.
No.
Or
we
others,
can agree on
like
that.
We said, that may be involved in this. Larry Warren, station manager, thank you very much for sharing that information. We'll stay on top. We'll probably have some more news at noon.
We'll have more on the noon news.
Got it.
Okay.
All right, Larry, thanks. Let's take another quick break for some underwriters, and when we come back, we'll share some of our environmental news that we've been covering this past week, some energy efficiency news, my trip to Puerto Rico, and what I learned there, and
Michael Mann's lawsuit. I have some news. Michael Mann's recent lawsuit news.
Okay. It's the Screen Earth. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is County Council Member Kim Carson. I have a message for Summit County dog owners. In public, always carry a leash and keep your dog on it, except in a designated off-leash area. Also, please pick up dog waste. Remember, dogs can't flush. Finally, make certain your dog is wearing a current rabies vaccination, dog license, and ID tag. Visit SummitCountyAnimalControl.com for more information. Summit County is a nonprofit organization.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage service provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW. Summit County residents are recycling more and more each year in their residential curbside recycling bin. Please help by putting acceptable recyclables in and keeping glass out. Thank you, Summit County. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to this Green Earth weekly talk show on environmental issues. She's Nell Larson. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining us in the studio is E.J. Elliott, head of our news division this summer. And we're going to spend some time talking about some news in the environmental world. EJ, what do you got with respect to some energy efficiency news?
So when you think about energy efficiency, you're not going to think about like the little things that you just use on a daily basis, and you don't never really shut them off unless mm-hmm. you're using them, and like you're like, oh, I should shut these off. The big one is cable TV boxes are now the second biggest energy users in many homes. And not all of them, but most of them. So in places where you're going to have a lot more AC, of course, they're going to have different energy uses, but right. most of the time, on average, cable TV box is number two.
Really?
What's that's just wild.
Yeah.
But what's number one?
Number one, I didn't look at
I that. Wonder. I'm like trying to compare this. Yeah. I'm like, is this on par with our refrigerators?
Because, I would think it was my refrigerator or my air conditioning system.
Yeah.
But the point is, I had cable boxes down around number eight or nine,
mm-mm.
you know, after my washer, dryer, dishwasher, and this. But
yeah.
you're saying that
toaster oven.
Yeah, but because that box is maybe doesn't draw a lot of energy on a, you know, per second or per hour basis. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's on 24 hours a day.
Yeah, it's on all the time, especially the newer ones. So what the average set top cable box with the digital recorder can consume as much as 35 watts of power on or off. It really doesn't matter if it's on or if it's off, because when it's off, they're still doing a lot of things with the cable boxes.
Right.
So the things that they say that happen when it's turned off is you're getting the spinning hard drive, and you have program guide updates and software downloads. So all of those are going to add up. And the only way you can really stop that is to plug it off, like to take it off altogether. But to turn it back on requires to reset it, and
yeah.
it goes through all this stuff. So
right.
it's not really user friendly to turn it off.
Right.
Mm.
I'm not doing that.
No. So
okay.
experts are, the industry is like trying to, you know, have some incentive to work with this and maybe have it when it's turned off and not in use to have it just not use any energy, or at least a very minimal
Or go
amount.
Into some type that of seems, sleep mode
right,
or something like that.
Like our computers can. You
exactly.
would think it can could go into a sleep mode.
Exactly. But there isn't any incentive to do that, and consumers don't know about it. So there's nothing from the consumer
well,
side of
here's
it.
Here's one thing people can do if they are going away for a period
right.
of time on business and they're going to be away for days or weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that probably is low on their list of things to do before they leave. Maybe you should
pull
unplug
that plug out.
Yeah.
Cable box. And when you come back, yeah, you know what? You have to set
yeah.
it up and spend a few minutes reprogramming.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something you can do to reduce your energy costs.
Exactly. And you may miss your favorite shows, but it's not like the internet can't provide that nowadays.
That's true, too. You have all,
but I
you
think
have options.
You made a good point, EJ. There's no consumer pressure from this point because mm-hmm. we weren't aware that our cable boxes were using yeah. so much of our energy.
Exactly.
Well, great.
Well, hey, let's get in touch with Thanks. Comcast then.
All right. So a nice little lesson learned there about energy efficiency, another step in the area of energy efficiency yeah. we can take. Okay. Thanks,
great.
EJ. What's next?
So next we're going to talk about Michael Mann. And as, you know, our devoted listeners probably know, he's a climate scientist.
He was on last week.
We have had him on the show.
Right. He was part of our show
a few
last
times.
Week.
And he... has talked a lot about his experiences. You know, his background is a climate scientist, and all of a sudden he was thrown into this. He came out with some climate science research about global warming mm-hmm. and climate change, and he just got caught up in political mayhem. And some of these sort of conservative or, quote, free market think tank groups have really kind of attacked him. And one of these groups was ATI, the American Tradition Institute. And... they, you know, have obviously been an opponent of climate science in general.
Right.
And they sued Michael Mann for a few reasons. But this goes back to January 2011. ATI submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to UVA, University of Virginia, for emails sent by Mann during his tenure right. at that school. So then the university and Mann together... actually decided to oppose that, and they fought the release of those documents on the ground that they were proprietary materials generated as part of his research. So then this is when ATI put the lawsuit in place, and they're saying, you know, they don't like the science and they think it's fraudulent and they want to see these
damaging,
documents
hurtful,
because it's
the usual litany of
yeah,
reasons. Right.
Exactly. And so in September 2012, the Virginia court ruled against ATI, saying, no, you're wrong. Michael Mann and UVA are right, and they have the right to do what they're doing.
And not release the emails.
And not release the emails.
Right.
And then the ATI took it to the Supreme Court. They appealed, went to the Supreme Court. And in April of this year, they unanimously upheld the lower court's ruling,
okay.
which is great. So, okay, another thing. But the latest step in this is that the court has, I guess, levied a fine for damages against ATI for bringing a frivolous lawsuit.
Sure.
And so Michael Mann, from what I've read, is very happy about this. You know, it's just kind of shows like this was just absurd.
Right.
You know, this is not a valid suit. And, you know, the details are that the fine was only $250,
what?
Which is nothing. But it's
for
the concept
a frivolous
that...
frivolous suit?
Right.
To,
through
to,
two court
to
systems
courts?
And...
$250?
Right, right. But regardless, okay. it's kind of resolved and it's shown, okay, the court is not going to... submit to this kind of material.
Okay. So, the American Tradition.
Oh, and the American Tradition has changed
Institute.
Their name, too. I wish I had that here.
Something better, I hope.
Yeah.
Something more clever.
It's something like Energy Environment Something Group. It's another vague
that has an environmental
name.
Angle to it.
It does.
So, it makes people believe that, think that it's actually an environmental advocacy group.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So congratulations. Good news for Michael
Good
Mann.
Good news for Michael Mann. And happy to support
a
scientist doing great work and who's been a great guest on the show.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Tell you what. Next, we'll do another news item.
Let's do the oil pipeline.
Okay.
Right now.
I've been wanting to get this in because this is about generally, you know, the Keystone XL pipeline and of course, lots of the proponents of that pipeline wanted to say how many jobs are going to be created by installing this pipeline, okay? And if you were to believe the proponents of it, it's thousands and thousands. I mean, in some cases, I heard one congressman say it was close to 12,000 people will be employed.
A massive number of jobs.
Unbelievable number. Well, I spoke with two people who work in the pipeline business, one person who lays natural gas pipelines, and another one who works in the oil pipeline business, who understands what it's involved in laying, installing oil pipelines. And generally, it's amazing. To lay a pipeline like Keystone would require maybe 100 people at most.
What?
In the field, no more than, say, 20 guys on a day-in, day-out basis, whose job it is to wake up in the morning and go work on the pipeline, about 20 guys to dig the
and
trenches.
And
guys to do the surveying, to do the clearing and grubbing, to do the actual welding and then laying of the line, you know, and then the backfilling and the final revegetation, that whole process, about 20 people. You may have another 20 or 30 people back in the office doing oversight or engineering or other support
work. Regulatory staff.
So let's round it up. Let's double it. And let's say 100 people at most who will be employed, whose full-time job it is to work on this pipeline. That's it. Not the thousands and thousands of people that the proponents of this pipeline like to promote and are quoted as saying. It's just not that. And these are specialists, too. That's another thing. These are guys who lay pipeline, and then when they're done that job, they go to another part of the country and lay pipeline. So it's a specialized type of work.
So it's not going to be the local citizens getting hired.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, hey, the pipeline's coming to town. Everybody's going to have a job. You know, it's like, hey, the circus. No, it's not like that. Maybe you'll provide some support work, you know, to go get some. They need a runner or something to go get some equipment at the hardware store or run to get sandwiches. But that's it. So let's just put that argument to bed. It doesn't take thousands of people. It takes maybe 100 to do this pipeline. You heard it here on this screen. All right. That's that story. Let's take one more quick break, and we'll come back. We've got a couple more news items.
That's right.
All right. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power offers watt-smart advice such as avoiding the use of large appliances like a washer or dryer between 2 and 8 p.m. because it helps reduce energy demand and keeps costs down for all of us. More ways to save energy at wattsmart.com.
Hey, it's This Green Earth. We got a few more minutes for some news items. Yeah, let me quickly share with you. My trip to Puerto Rico last week was a family thing. And what I saw with respect to some environmental issues and also concepts of sustainability, that's what the show is about. So what's interesting is that there their electricity is produced by burning oil. Okay, they don't burn coal, they don't burn natural gas. They burn oil to produce electricity. That's a pretty dirty form of producing electricity. It's also expensive. So electricity is expensive as a result. So as a result of that, you see a lot of homes that don't necessarily have central air or have any air conditioning on because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
You see lots of restaurants that are open air. The majority of restaurants I went to were just kind of outdoors. You know, covered by outdoor settings. So they don't consume a lot of electricity. Another thing that's interesting is that a lot of homes don't have water heaters. Or if they do, they have small units because, again, those are electric systems and it's expensive to heat water. So what they'll do is they'll put a 100 or 250-gallon tank on their roof and darken it and heat water naturally. Solar heating systems. I saw some homes that were otherwise kind of, ramshackle, but not the, kind of low-income homes that had solar panels that either were providing some form of electricity or heating their water.
Right. And I think that's a relatively common trend in some of these sort of semi-developing countries because electricity is expensive. And so it's worth it for every home to have a solar panel up there to take care of their needs.
Yeah. So actually, what's interesting, it's concepts of sustainability that we here try to embrace. Yeah,
right.
Solar panels, use less water, you know.
But we need like massive solar arrays of thousands of panels to take care of our massive energy needs.
Exactly. And they're just kind of comfortable with it. We don't need air conditioning. Yeah, it's a little warm, it's a little uncomfortable. You got a ceiling fan. okay, that's fine. Now, if they could afford it, they probably would get an air conditioner every now and then.
Right.
But that's the world they live in. Another thing is gas is expensive. It's well over $4 a gallon. So although there are a number of old cars on the road and they have a lot of emissions problems, I saw that firsthand, a lot of new cars are small, compact, and that's partially because the roads are narrow. The infrastructure there doesn't accommodate
right, but it's a good
cars.
Point. The cars are but tiny.
The cars are tiny. And I believe the younger generation is comfortable with buying smaller cars because they're sporty looking and they're kind of cool looking and they get good mileage. So again, acts of that we would consider sustainable, but it's the economy that forces them to act in a sustainable fashion. So kind of interesting in that way.
Yeah.
One other thing is food. Food is expensive because it can be expensive to import meat and other food that they can't produce on the island. So they rely on a lot of local foods. It's limited, though. It's limited.
Yeah, the varieties.
The varieties limited. Yeah. Bananas, plantains, coconuts, some peanuts, maybe a little rice, other, guava, star fruit. You can't make a healthy diet out of that, but it's healthy food. It's local.
Right.
What's surprising is not a lot of fish. Fish is hard to come by. Partially because of overfishing and partially because of, as a result of that, you have to now have a little bigger boat to go farther out in the water to catch fish. And that's in a boat costs money. So they don't have the money to afford to go out and do a lot of fishing. Commercial fishing isn't available there. And what fish is caught usually ends up in restaurants than in the market because the restaurants will pay a premium for that fish.
Sure.
So we
because they can get American tourists like you
to spend $25, $30 for a tuna meal. Tuna. But we went to the market. We couldn't find fish. We actually had to go to a guy's house to find fish.
I love that. Out.
So anyway, real interesting concepts of both what's going on there environmentally and what goes on there sustainable in a sustainability fashion.
Now, what about sort of the litter side of things?
That was interesting. Like you say, you kind of experienced when you're in Panama, their solid waste infrastructure is challenged because they don't have a lot of room for landfills. Small island. So... and their infrastructure is such that they can't accommodate big garbage trucks. They're small trucks, so your trash only gets picked up once a week. As a result, trash builds up in these cans, spills over, birds, raccoons, everybody's at the party. They're grabbing food. A lot of litter. A lot of people chucking a lot of bottles and litter. Litter is a problem there. That's interesting. But solid waste is a real challenge. Managing that solid waste. They do their best trying to implement recycling programs, but that's another generation to address. So anyway, that's around.
Well, did you have a good trip? Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, it was great.
Good.
Except for the tarpon I lost after an hour and 20-minute fight.
That's
another story for another show.
Another show.
Perhaps on the mountain life tomorrow.
But speaking of another show, I have an update in front of me with tomorrow's mountain life schedule, and it says right at the top, Chris Cherniak sits in for Lynn tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'll be talking about my fish story for 20 minutes.
You'll be covering, Chris, a book called American Catch, The Fight for Our Local Seafood. Maybe you can tie that in. You can talk about Puerto Rico. Psychologist Dr. Ariel Ford of Low Owl Wellness will also be on the show, as will former Park City Council person Leslie Miller on a new project that she's undertaken.
Wow.
That's tomorrow. You're doing all of that.
And Tim Henney and I,
are we with Tim Henney, of course,
on the mountain life.
Lynn will be out.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. It's time to wrap up. Let's thank our underwriters, for whom this show would not be possible. They include Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
and Berkshire Hathaway Real Estate. Again, thanks to Sarah Wright.
Executive Director of Utah Clean Energy, for joining us in the first half of the show. Don't forget there's a meeting on rooftop solar tonight.
At 6 o'clock down at the Richens Building.
That's
right. Kimball Junction. Learn more about that, what's going on in the state with respect to solar.
Yeah, and don't forget you can always join us on Facebook at KPCW, This Green Earth.
All right. Well, that's it. And again, stay tuned to the breaking news. We'll have more news at the noon hour with respect to... today's arrest of the two past attorneys general, Utah's attorneys general, Mark Shurtleff and John Swallow. That is a big news story, and it's developing by the hour. KPCW will be covering it at noon. Stay tuned for that. And NPR News is next. Thanks for joining us. Remember, this is 91.9 FM, KPCW, Park City in the Heber Valley.
That's right. Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
NPR News is next.